Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time again to grab your gear, hit the road, as we take to the trail and trail after the all over the map family. They wander the world in search of their forever home. So let's find them. Let's see if we can tune the radio dial in. Come in, Domners. Caitlin and Michael Domner,
are you there?
I feel like I should have one of those rotating dials. We go up and down the dial trying to find that frequency. There they are. We've got them in. So I guess there's a little cold in the air down there, even though it's beginning to be summer, because I hear Michael has a little stuffy nose down there.
Yeah, I've got this congestion. It's really, because it's spring here, I think I have a little bit of allergies as well, which kind of complicates things, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's like 90 degrees and everything is flowering here in Mendoza, Argentina.
Well, Mendoza, there's another one of those fantasy places I read about in the travel brochures. This is the wine country of Argentina. Does it kind of look like our California wine country? I'll bet it does.
It really does. When we were driving in, we took an overnight bus from Buenos Aires to Mendoza. It was about a 15-hour bus ride. But when we woke up in the morning and we were driving through, it felt like Central Valley, like that desert before the Sierra Nevadas.
Right.
Kind of more Temecula than Napa.
Yeah, even Paso Robles. Caitlin and I actually spent our honeymoon in Paso Robles.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's very, very similar, just kind of that kind of dry, arid feeling, but it's well irrigated. So they have just rows and rows of, grapevines too.
And gently rolling hills, I suspect, right?
I actually know. It's like flat, straight up till the mountain range, the Andes, and then it goes straight to like the highest peak outside of Asia is right between Mendoza and Santiago, like right at the border.
So it looks
Aconcagua is a pretty, I mean, you can just see the Andes in the background covered in snow. It's pretty amazing.
So then it reminds me more of Colorado then, because you get this flat plain and then all of a sudden this spectacular mountain rises up out of nowhere.
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah. All right. So this very scenic area, this kind of has that look, that postcard look that you were looking for, you keep saying, in the forever home. We'll just jump to that one, right? We'll get that one off the table. Any interest in Mendoza as a forever home?
You know, it's definitely beautiful. It checks a lot of the boxes as far as kind of the locale, the the mountains, the feel of it. I would say really does kind of have that the right feel. My biggest hesitation is really the kind of political arena now here in Argentina and their currency. So their currency has dropped. I don't know, but almost like 25% in the last year against the dollar. And it just is falling even more. It took us in between 2 weeks. I sent us some cash through Western Union because here in Argentina, it's kind of crazy. If you just use your debit card,
the official currency,
you get the official exchange rate from the government, which is 100 pesos per US dollar. So it's about a peso per penny.
Right.
But if you do it, if you have cash and you go buy pesos, which I can accomplish by sending myself Western Union cash, it's 200. So 215 actually this time, pesos per
Big
US
difference.
Dollar.
Yeah.
You get literally double the cash if you do it on the black, quote unquote, black market, as opposed to the official exchange rate that the government says.
We'll just say the local economy instead of the international economy.
Isn't that amazing? All right. You know, that's something we've never really talked about, but the mechanics of money, is it important? I told you my famous story. If I did, I'll repeat it again real quickly, but I've only gone to Mexico a couple of times. Once early on, my wife and I on a whim said, we'll drive down to Ensenada. And I didn't have any cash. I had like 20 bucks. I never carry cash. I'm an American.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, we'll go get some cash or whatever. And this is many years ago, they didn't have ATMs anywhere. And so I had a credit card and I thought, well, all right, that's fine. Most of these places did not accept credit cards in those days. I had to find cash. Now, I suspect a lot of that's changed, but I couldn't find cash, and we had to literally get around and go home because I used up all my cash in like the first day.
No, I would say here in Argentina, it's actually been hard for us to spend our cash. We have to go out of our way to pay with efectivo than it does for us to pay with tarjeta. So it's most everything has gone cashless here in Argentina.
Yeah. And it's, for us as Americans, getting that double the exchange rate by using cash as opposed to our cards, it makes it worth kind of jumping through the hoops to pay cash for as much as we can.
Right.
I even bought our plane tickets here in Argentina. So basically I can book them online, and then I had to go to their physical Aerolíneas Argentinas counter in the middle of Buenos Aires and stand in line for like 45 minutes. I did it twice because I didn't know how to do it the first time. And so I went and stood in their line for 45 minutes to pay cash, because we literally got it for half price of what it would have been if we just paid for cards on their website. So,
isn't that amazing?
It's brought about some challenges, but at the same time, it's been interesting learning about it.
So I think that's something that most Americans aren't ready for when we travel outside of this country, whether it's on a trip or a forever adventure or a long-term stay. I don't know that we know how to handle the money. When I was a little boy, we for a while toyed with the idea of accepting. My dad was a work executive at Chrysler. He was kept getting assignments around the country, and we had a chance to go to Switzerland, and we took some classes, and they said one of the things you have to not do is when you get frustrated, go up to somebody and say, "What's that in real money?" We have a tendency to view the dollar as real money. And in many places, like you're in Belize, the dollar is their exchange.
Ecuador, for sure.
Ecuador, yep. The same. So that makes it somehow comforting. Well, I know exactly what it is, but trying to convert it into lira or into, I don't know what the Argentinian dollar is called.
Argentinian peso. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Trying to convert it and have all these different conversion rates. And then you got all this craziness going on. I was just reading this morning in Turkey, the lira is going crazy. So it's you used to get 3 to the dollar, and now you get 13 to the dollar, and it could be 20 to the dollar. And it's changing radically every day as the I never quite understood the international fluctuations of currency here. So
even here in Argentina, the first time I got cash, kind of the first week of November, it was 208, I think. And then today, when I just sent some more cash, it was 220 almost. So it's like a, I don't know, almost a 10% increase over a matter of weeks in the amount of money that we get when we send ourselves. And it's really fascinating.
So not to get political, because we certainly don't want to turn people off. We live in a very politicized world. Everything's political, left, right, and center. But you alluded to this before, South America, and maybe I'm going to be an ugly American, maybe I'm going to oversimplify this thing, but they seem to veer, as you even kind of said, between all of Latin America, between this kind of model of authoritarian strongman that gets stuff done, but lock people up and people disappear and die and go to prison, but it's this authoritarian state. And then the complete opposite, which is a different kind of maybe an authoritarian state, a socialist state, where it's the government, because there seems to be rich and poor. I don't know that there's a huge middle class in South America. So the poor people.
I'm realizing in our adventures how precarious democracy is.
Yes.
And realizing that democracy is very tightly connected to economics. Like political systems and economic systems are very tightly interwoven. And I think you hit it, the nail on the head. If you don't have an educated middle class, democracy doesn't work. Exactly. And I know I'll probably get some flack for that.
But I completely agree. Yeah, I completely agree.
It's why we made education required, because we knew that you couldn't vote if you didn't know how to educate yourself on the issues and make good decisions, right? Whether like as prejudiced and biased as it was, ensuring that educated landowners were the only ones voting at the early times, there was some merit, like, right? Because it's complicated. Like understanding, like the Roman democracy fell when people could vote on the senators who would throw them circuses and give them bread.
Right.
Right. So when you can vote yourself bread, what is the advantage to voting for somebody who's going to make you work? Right. So we're in Argentina. We just went through elections. The government completely flip-flopped. Now the governor, the president's on his own, and he has to figure out how to work with the International Monetary Fund. And he's telling his people, don't worry, we're not going to do austerity measures. But he has to talk to the IMF, and the IMF's like, we won't extend your credit if you don't implement austerity measures. And exactly.
It's exactly what happened with Greece, you know, in the last decade, really. Right. Greece was just so spending so much money and borrowing because the money was coming so fast cheap. And loose and cheap, and it was great. But as soon as that they start to reach kind of this tipping point, the IMF or other countries that are loaning them money, whatever, and for some reason, Greece kind of fell into that same thing. They're like, "No, we're not gonna practice austerity. We're not gonna stop spending," right. Which doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does make sense if you think of it as like if our teenager didn't have to work, but they still got to live rent free and have food and buy their clothes, right? If you've been supporting somebody for a long time, there is that sense that this is how it should be,
yeah.
right? And we were talking to one of the winemakers here in Mendoza, and he said, literally in Mendoza, every harvest year, fruit will go rot in the fields because we can't find enough workers who are willing to come and pick the fruit because they get paid more on unemployment than they do working. As soon as you work, you lose unemployment. So keep the safe money from the government rather than risk your unemployment to go find a job. And so they have to import people from Bolivia wow. to come and harvest their grapes and their lemons and their olives because Argentinians are unwilling to do the work. And we see that in California as well, right? It's yeah. a crazy phenomenon when you've kind of outgrown your own economy.
I'm going to go one step further and then we'll get off of politics here because you've touched on something I think is really we're feeling here in this country, everybody's feeling around the world. And that is what is the right balance between rich and poor? And I say the right balance is the middle. I'm a middle of the road person in so many of my political views here. And I think the middle class, the erosion of the middle class in the United States threatens us to go in that same direction.
Yep,
because the middle class not only is educated, as you said, has some awareness and pays attention to what's going on, but they got a stake in the system. They got a little business. They got a little shop. Yep. They got some skin in the game. And too often, if it's just the rich people, then they're going to rig the system, as we all tend to believe, in their favor. And the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. If it's the opposite, if it's in a social, that's a fascist model, in a socialist model, it's give them bread and buy their votes. And who cares? Whoever will give me the most, I'll vote for you.
Asked our friends, what does entrepreneurship look like down here in Argentina? Because if we are going to move to Argentina, you know we're going to start businesses because that's how we do.
Right. That's how we roll. We're Californians.
And he said, if they assume that if you're starting a business, you're wealthy, right? Because capitalists are wealthy, right?
Right.
So he said that they make you pay the expected year's taxes for your first year before you start. So you basically have to pay your taxes before you can start collecting revenue, which I'm like, that's a pretty dang huge obstacle to getting a business off the ground.
Right.
But then the second thing he said is even once you're up and running, they take 60% of top line revenue. And I was just like, how is that even sustainable? Like, I have no idea. And then he's like, and I wouldn't even mind that, right? If it were like Norway or Sweden and it went back into the education system and the infrastructure.
And you got a ton for it. Yeah, right. In Norway, they pay a ton, but they get a ton.
For your money, right?
Here, he said, basically, the politicians get wealthy. Like, that's what happens.
That's what happens with your money. He's like, Argentina is the only place where you go into politics to come out a millionaire.
Yeah.
The VP has like a $2.5 million per month peso retirement plan that she gets every month of her life for the rest of her life for being the vice president. It's so backwards and so crazy. And it's hard. We love Argentina. We have really enjoyed our time in Argentina. And I think there would be many reasons that we would set up our forever home here, except for the political and economic climate. It's not sustainable, in my opinion.
And I think I honestly, seeing what we've seen and talking to the business owners that we've talked to, I think the next 2 or 3 years here are going to be very rough. And they're either going to go the way of Venezuela, which or Greece, you know, that are kind of standing at the precipice Or they can, they're going to turn things around, but without anybody willing to make the hard decision, because it's easier to vote themselves bread, there's no way they're going to turn the ship around.
So, and it can go the other way too. We've seen, you know, again, I say it really is fascism and communism. I know fascism is a word out of fashion, but this kind of authoritarian top-down group of people that runs the country in their interests. Or the opposite, we're going to run it for the to buy votes for the mass poor. I may be overstating both of these approaches, but it's that it neither one of those are aimed at the middle class, the entrepreneur, the small business owner, uneducated mass, or the elites at the top who are trying. Because it's, in a sense, it sounds like the elite system benefits too, because if you can't start a business, then all the money goes to them. They're collecting the money and distributing it some to buy votes, and then the rest of it goes into their pocket. You know,
it's funny. I've never made this parallel, but I wonder if the descent into authoritarian regimes from socialist communistic tendencies is just rational, right? Because we move into socialist communist, and I know they're not the same, but that sort of trend of let's take care of the people, right? So those are the people who are looking to be taken care of. These are the people who, for one reason or another, have said with their votes, I am no longer capable of taking care.
Making the best decision. So finding somebody who is.
I want a paternalistic father to take care of me here, right?
Right. And so I wonder if the descent from the Russian Revolution to Stalin, I wonder if it's inevitable, because it just goes from many people taking care of many people to a single person taking care of many people.
And they promise efficiency. And if for a moment, as Mussolini famously said, the man who invented modern fascism said, you know, I'm going to make the trains run on time. People are frustrated. The trains don't work. Nothing works. Inflation's out of control, all this stuff. So somebody comes in and says, I can make a parallel to some of the authoritarian types in the United States today too. I'm going to fix it all for you here. I alone can fix it for you. Trust me. And then, so we trust that person. But the problem is, in the end, they don't have a paternalistic view. They have a monopolistic view. They tend to rig the system for them.
And I think in order to make the system run, which is what they promised, they have to consolidate power. That's the bottom line. In order to make the trains run on time, they need to be the ones in power to make sure that that's what's happening. So,
then unfortunately they get greedy, and then they start pocketing the profits.
What's the phrase? Power corrupts, but absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Absolutely. And then so you have a revolution again, because one person didn't deliver what they promised. Instead, they just took it over, and cronyism. And you see this in communist countries. You see this throughout the world. And in right-wing countries, there's a big movement going on as of this morning in Turkey, because right-wing authoritarian dictator there refuses to raise interest rates, because he says, you know, again, his followers won't like this. And so because inflation's running away, they got a 20% inflation. It could go much higher.
I mean, the people are loving the run-up to it, which is exactly where we're at in the United States too. They're even though the stock market is at all time highs every other day, they're refusing to raise the interest rates, because cheap and easy money is what people like.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what gets our housing at ridiculous prices. It gets our stocks at ridiculous prices. And then eventually, oh, big surprise, it all crashes. So we seem to run through these two extremes. And I've always felt, this is my libertarian Californian speaking here, that the middle of the road, the small business people in the middle, are the ones that have a stake in the system, that become educated about what to do, and keep both sides sane, the rich and the poor. And I think that if you eliminate the middle, you're in danger. All right, so that's our political rant, folks. You can write your letters to. But I think that, again, we're bringing an American sensibility, and more than that, a California sensibility. California is above all else. People love to say we're left-wing kooks, or in Orange County, we're right-wing nuts. I think we're above all else, we're independent-minded.
Yeah.
We are in Orange County here. There are 30 cities, not one, because we can't come together as one. We love this individualistic approach to everything. And I think that's the American view, the Western.
Certainly Western. I don't even think it's the United States. I mean, our political system was built on the political writings of the English and the French and the Germans. Since the 1700s, the Enlightenment and the rationalist era really started this whole idea that the government's only job is to protect individual rights. Like, that's why we start in the first place.
Individual.
So it is interesting thinking about it from more of a Eastern perspective of, well, not communism, but community, right?
Yes.
We come together to support one another. And that seems to work in small circles, like family members, community members, taking care of ourselves. I just don't know how we translate that onto a country that in the United States, we have 50 states spanning almost of a continent. Argentina's taking up a good third of the South American continent. Like, when you get to these kind of scales, it's just, I don't know how to wrap my head around how do you take care of people and protect individual freedoms? Like, it's a wrestling
match. I think the biggest, like, one of my biggest frustrations with modern America is a sense of entitlement, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have a very strong belief in radical personal responsibility, right?
Radical personal responsibility
for yourself and for everything, you know, and trying to blame the problems on other people or expecting other people to save you. Like, it just, it's hard for me to really wrap my head around that and understand where they're coming from.
And so, maybe that is the flip side, though, is that in those same societies where you see a sense of duty and responsibility to family, you also have the flip side of personal honor and like personal responsibility.
Yes.
And Confucius is like, take care of your mother and father, but you have to be the one taking care of them. Like, you aren't being taken care of, right? Yeah. So almost the in order to take care of others, you have to be good yourself, right? You aren't in a position to help others if you're destitute or if you've lost your sense of honor and personal responsibility. So I think if it's going to work, I think you're right. It has to start with a personal sense of honor and responsibility that then extends, I'm responsible for the people around me.
I love this. It wasn't what we expected this morning. We're doing political debate 101 here, or political theory 101 here. But I think that's one of the challenges as Americans go out to the rest of the world. It doesn't look like this. This is a unique experiment, what we're doing here. There aren't a lot of places that emulate this kind of balance between rich and poor and this individual responsibility and a community responsibility. And I think that's been the struggle of America since the beginning. We're all out for ourselves, but then we have to think of the greater good too once in a while. And how do you do that? Yeah, last thing, and then we'll wrap this up, because maybe this is the theme of this political trends here
today.
This is
the political rant.
I had somebody on a different show, and they had traveled to Africa, and they were stunned by, as Californians, how much the community, it's all about we and not about me in these communities, because they have to rely on each other. The governments are unstable. The police are corrupt in some places. You've seen that in some cases where that's how things get done. We pull together. And somebody pulls you out of the ditch. Somebody goes and helps you here. Somebody makes this and says, don't ask. It just
Your network and your personal network is what gets things done around you.
Yeah. And that's a communitarian, not communistic, but communitarian view where the community looks out for each other and supports each other, not for a payout, but because if I help you and you help me, that's how we get through life here in this crazy world.
Yeah. It's synergy, not dependence.
And I think too, it comes from a place of being balanced yourself, right? I mean, if you're frantically trying to get to the next place and scramble for the next dollar, it's really hard to stop and pull the person out of the ditch, right?
So
I think that sense of community has to start with kind of a core strength or a core feeling of security.
I agree, because you don't come into the game saying, well, you got to take care of me. And at the same time, I don't come into the game saying, I'm only going to take care of me.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it's like in relationships. In order for both partners to give 50-50, both partners actually need to give 100%, right? Like, you can't give 50
that's
and
deep.
Hold the line and say, okay, I'm not going any farther. You come and meet me or we're done, right? It's both partners giving 100%, and at the end of the day, it comes out equal.
Well, you've led me into an area that many of us didn't expect to go into, and I wonder if that isn't the challenge of Americans traveling the world and finding a forever home, because we're all brought up in this system of fairness and what's right. I gotta look out for me, but I gotta look out for the we. I gotta take care of my own responsibility, but that doesn't mean I can't be responsible for others. You know, this, and that is a very hard balance that the rest of the world, they either go one extreme or the other. It's either the many want to control the system, or the few want to control the system. But that balance, and that clearly, whether you went into this or not, was that something you even considered as you thought, well, we're going to travel the world. I'm just going to find this idyllic home, as you talk about with the stream and the mountain view and everything like that. You weren't thinking about the political or economic landscape of that postcard.
Right. The postcard actually needs context, it turns out.
Postcard needs context. Well, give us some context and take us out of today's show here. What have we learned out of this travel so far? And finding that context. What kind of context are you looking for?
I think one thing that I'll kick off and let Caitlin wrap us up here is just how frail the system of democracy is. Like we were saying earlier. I mean, you know, within one or two generations, like I look at Argentina and I look at over the last 50 or 60 years and seeing kind of their history and how they've changed and how they're kind of standing at the precipice right now and recognizing that somebody that a country that was economically strong, viable, like very
has a rich history and
rich history. I mean, we went to a polo match here. We went to a ballet. We took tango lessons. Like we've done a lot of
wine tasting,
incredible things here in Argentina that we've really enjoyed. But seeing how precarious that is based on the political situation and the decisions that we make every single day, really, it kind of brings it home that we need to be good stewards of the things that we're given, whether it's as a country or as a family or as a person. We need to be cognizant and be aware of what's happening around us and making sure that we are speaking the direction that we want to go.
Yeah, I don't think Amen. I can improve on that. I think that's
well, a good way to leave it out, Michael, it comes up with the thought of the day here and wraps us up. It is something to consider as you decide to leave this country and go look for that Shangri-La on the other side of the horizon, that it isn't just how it looks, but that how it functions is just as important
right.
to
yeah,
us here. Yeah. All right. Well, where are you off to next? Are we getting closer to the South Pole?
We are.
We're headed south. Tomorrow morning, we fly to Bariloche, which everybody that we tell that to in Argentina is like, oh my gosh, that's like my favorite place in Argentina is Bariloche. So they're building it up, whether that's for better or for
we'll
worse.
Find out. Sometimes
we don't have super high expectations, we're telling ourselves. But so we're headed there. And then Ushuaia, which is the last city in the kind of the furthest south city in the world. And then from there, we'll get on our cruise to Antarctica. So that's over the next 2 weeks here before we get onto our cruise. So
amazing. Well, join us. Don't leave the journey yet. It's just getting good here, right here on the right here as we travel around with the All Over the Map family, looking for that forever home. Right here, live on Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net. Streaming live from the University of California, Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.